Well, thank you all very much for joining us. This is Jonathan Armstrong speaking to you from the UK. And with me is my colleague, Eric Sinrod. You're in California today, Eric.
I'm sitting in a high-rise overlooking the beautiful San Francisco Bay.
Fantastic. And you've been thinking this week about homeland security. What's on your mind?
Yes, and we're happy to keep bringing you, by the way, these Tech Law 10 weekly podcasts where the law and information technology intersect, and we try to do this across the pond, me and Jonathan from Duane Morris. Yeah, I guess the question I pose is, are George Orwell's fears of a governmental big brother from his novel 1984 actually coming true now? Well, follow on and let's see. Recent press has reported on a particular government document. It's titled Privacy Compliance Review, and that document was issued not too long ago by the U.S. Department of Homeland Security. The document reveals that the DHS, shorthand for Department of Homeland Security, the DHS Command Center regularly monitors social networking sites like Facebook and Twitter, popular sites like Hulu, controversial sites including WikiLeaks, and news and commentary sites like Drudge Report and the Huffington Post. The Privacy Compliance Review points out that since mid-2010, the DHS National Operations Center has implemented a social networking / media capability. And what this includes, Jonathan, is routine monitoring of, quote, publicly available online forums, blogs, public websites, and message reports. The motivation behind this monitoring supposedly is, quote, to collect information used in providing situational awareness and establishing a common operating picture, close quote. But what does that actually mean? We hear these words, situational awareness and common operating picture, and it's not readily apparent on the face what that means. So the report goes on to state that the monitoring assists the DHS and other agencies in managing responses to world events like the 2010 Haiti earthquake and border control for the Winter Olympics in Canada. Websites subject to monitoring are supposedly publicly available, according to the report, and the monitored information, like I said before, helps in terms of, they repeat this mantra, situation awareness in operating pictures and to allow for more timely information for decision makers. The document goes on to insist that DHS will not keep permanent copies of monitored internet traffic. However, the agency can retain the information for up to 5 years. So the next question I pose is, do you now feel, at least for those of us in the United States, do you now feel warm, cozy, and safe? On the one hand, Jonathan, we might feel assured that DHS is trying to stay on top of its game with respect to situational awareness, and we might be comforted that the monitored traffic is publicly available and will not be maintained permanently by DHS. On the other hand, and as Tevye from Fiddler on the Roof used to always say, there's always another hand. We might be a little less happy to know that our online movements and communications on certain websites might be monitored by the government. And do we really know for sure how this information is being used? And there might be some concern that something we say online could be misconstrued detrimentally and to our disadvantage vis-a-vis the government. So it seems to me there might need to be a little bit more of an open public dialogue concerning the government's monitoring these websites so we know exactly what the government is up to. Those are my two cents.
I think you're right on this. I mean, the Privacy Commissioner over here had a good line, I think, that he said we must be careful that we're not sleepwalking into a surveillance society. And I think that's probably right. I think we do need to have an open debate about what we are and are not prepared to share on the basis of safety. I mean, my gut feel is that the UK is probably different from most of the rest of Europe. I think given the troubles that we had in Northern Ireland particularly, and given the 7/7 attacks we had over here, I think that as a general rule, people in the UK are more relaxed about things like monitoring of our social media, monitoring of closed-circuit TV, so looking at people on surveillance cameras when they walk around the street, than in other countries in Europe particularly. You generally tend to have a historical divide. So those countries that have been under occupation by repressive regimes like France, Italy, Spain, Germany, the whole of the former Soviet states, tend to react very badly to any form of surveillance, online or physical. But I think in my view, I mean, one of the things that's interesting, I think, is the level at which that does go down. So, for example, in the UK, we had a good case this week over a guy who had fallen out with his neighbour. The neighbour was playing his music too loud. And it's in a sleepy part of the UK called Dedham. It's near Colchester, if you're familiar with the paintings of John Constable.
So sleepy it's Dedham over there, huh?
It is, yeah. It's a very sort of idyllic part of the world to an extent. And there was a dispute over playing of loud music. So one of the people in the dispute went back to his flat, and he just put on Facebook, if you think you've had a bad day, I have the killer of James Bulger, I think he put those sort of words. Now, James Bulger was a cause célèbre here. It was a child who was killed by two other children, and there is a court order that prohibits anybody identifying a location where the Bulger killers might be. And, of course, the neighbour wasn't James Bulger's killer. He just said it as sort of a joke, sort of to release his frustration. Anyhow, the long short is he's got a 12-week suspended jail sentence and a sentence of 120 hours community work, cleaning toilets and hedgerows and so on, as a result. And why was he caught? Well, in this case, an off-duty police officer just saw the comment, reported it, and they went and knocked on his door. So I think as well as Homeland Security, which is obviously something that we all have a vested interest in protecting, we're also seeing more activity around conventional law enforcement, looking at what we do and say online. And I think whilst ever reacting to current threats is probably something that nobody would argue with, I wonder if people feel the same about their history. I mean, we've said this before, Eric, the internet's got the memory of an elephant, it never forgets. If I'm a reactionary in my youth, and then 20 years later I stand for political office, would I really want all of that information to be trawled through by the government to influence the political campaign, for example? I suspect your take on it is absolutely correct, that we might decide as a society that we do want to do that, but we've just got to think about it a bit more and have a debate in the open, haven't we?
Yeah, indeed. And, you know, to some extent, you know, there might be concern about, you know, past conduct coming to light and perhaps, you know, tainting our image, if you will. But perhaps as we get more and more used to the new internet age and that we're all living our lives, you know, out loud in front of each other, maybe there'll be a sort of a diminished effect. You know, I think back on when Gary Hart was running for president here in the United States in the late 1980s, and it, you know, he taunted the press to follow him because there were allegations that he was philandering outside of his marital relationship, and then they found him on a boat called Monkey Business with another woman, and it torpedoed his presidential campaign. You know, just a few years later, President Clinton, not yet President Clinton, was running for a high office, and there were allegations that he had not been faithful to Hillary, and yet he became president because maybe the outrage factor had gone down. So if you said everybody's living their lives online, if we were to disqualify, you know, anyone who might have a picture of them on the internet, you know, drinking alcohol when they were underage or doing something else, it might not have as great an impact later on as we originally thought. But still, there are concerns. I hope I'm responding to your point.
No, absolutely, I understand. I think that's probably about time we've got, all we've got time for today. Do listen in. to us next time round, whether you be the security services or not. You're very welcome to listen to these podcasts, the more the merrier. You can also engage with us via Twitter, via LinkedIn. We've got a small group of followers on LinkedIn, and we try and share materials with them as well. If you just drop down the groups box, put TechLaw 10 in that little window that appears, you can access the group. You do Facebook as well, don't you, Eric? We've got more than 50 now podcasts that are on iTunes, and you're welcome to go back onto iTunes or onto the website and download others that you might have missed. And we're always very happy to receive ideas for things that we should cover in forthcoming podcasts. You can contact us via email as well. I'll give you my email address, jparmstrong@duanemorris.com. And obviously, if you're extremely well-connected, you can just follow us home in black sedans. Eric, why don't you give us your email address and wrap up?
Okay, this is Eric Sinrod. I'm at EJ Sinrod, EJSINROD, at DuaneMorris.com. And I want to thank you for joining us this week, and we'll be back at you soon. Take care.
Thanks for listening.